First of all, I would like to thank the brethren for inviting me to speak. I'm very grateful to be here. I also want to thank the Matthew family for hosting Alex and me this weekend. You've been very gracious hosts. And then I also want to bring the love of the Washington, D.C. class, especially Sister Karen Earle. She definitely sent me an email to say to remind me not to forget to bring her love. So as you can see with this topic here, LGBTQ and you, it is actually the second of a two-part talk that I have composed. The reason why I've chosen this subject is that in our class, this topic has come up quite a bit recently. And in speaking in private conversation with other brethren, it seems that this also has been a topic of conversation amongst them. The other reason, too, is that I personally have relatives who are lesbian, and I also have one of which actually has children who identify as transgender as well as gay. So it hits me personally from that standpoint, and I suspect there may be some amongst you that also know someone who also falls into this category. And then the last reason is that for the last 5 years, I've been working at the largest LGBTQ health facility in the state of Maryland. I chose that job when the opportunity arose because I was thinking of it from the standpoint of being a sympathetic high priest, because I wanted to do something that was going to be out of my comfort zone, knowing that possibly during the millennium, I may be called upon to help individuals such as these walk up the highway of holiness. So it was for that reason also that I chose this topic. The first part of the talk, deals with reaffirming the biblical stance on against homosexuality. So I want to let you know that from the standpoint that this talk actually assumes and accepts the biblical injunction against homosexuality. What this talk is going to do is then take it to the next level or the next step is, we as brethren, how can we help an individual amongst our fellowship that might be going through this particular struggle? We know that there are individuals and have been individuals that have gone through this, and I'm hoping that some of the material that I'll be bringing out will be of a benefit to not only those who are struggling with this, but also family members and friends who may be at a loss of how to handle this and what to do with this situation. So the other thing I want to point out, first of all, is this is actually taken from a slide from where I work. We have an orientation that we go through in how to deal with members of the community who identify as gay or transgender. And this is an interesting set of, information. This is a collation of a series of polls that have been done starting in 2001 to the present. And I want to point out some things to you here because this also goes to show how much morality has changed and the view on morality has changed in this country within the last now 17 years since it's 2018. This data is up to 2015. If you look here, in this very first Gallup poll, you'll notice that in the year 2008, the two lines intersected. The top line represents people who, the bottom line represents those who believe it to be morally acceptable, and the yellow line represents those who believe it's morally wrong. You will notice that in the year 2008, it intersected, and that since that year, within the last 10 years, that the opposite morality or view of morality has occurred in this country, so that we as Christians who hold to the traditional view against homosexuality are now definitely in the minority and oftentimes are viewed negatively. And it's also generational, too. So the younger the generation, the more accepting they are of not accepting the biblical view on morality. Now, the next slide here is the quote from 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 11. We know that in Corinth, this was something that the Apostle Paul had to contend with, because in the verses previous to this, he gave the list of vices that those people who practice such things would not inherit God's kingdom. But then he sums it up in verse 11, and such were some of you, but ye are washed, but ye are sanctified, but ye are justified in the name of the Lord Jesus, and this by the Spirit of our God, indicating that those individuals who were practicing such things, that once they heard the gospel message, they were so influenced to their heart that they made changes in their lifestyle to bring their lives in harmony with God's will for them. So unfortunately, however, is that within the last 30 years, there has been an attempt to redefine the scripture injunction against this by theologians, which is even more distressing. And so as a result, there are many denominations, Christian denominations, which have capitulated to that view and now no longer hold or think that the biblical witness against homosexuality is relevant. And here are some of the reasons why they think that is the case. Our modern worldview includes advances and discoveries unknown to ancient peoples, making biblical pronouncements on homosexuality incomplete or even erroneous. Homosexuality has a genetic or biological component that the writers of the Bible did not realize. And since homosexuals and transgendered individuals are born that way, their sexual orientation is immutably fixed and cannot change. So these are the arguments that we hear for those that are against the biblical view. So what I did, and I'm not going to dwell at length on this because I don't want to get bogged down in the controversy with regard to the scientific studies for and against, but what I did is I went ahead and created a list of some of the more common arguments that you hear from the scientific community trying to prove that it has a genetic or biological basis. These are taken directly from an article which appeared in the Advocate magazine at the beginning of January of this year. The Advocate magazine is probably the largest LGBTQ publication in the United States, and it was this particular article was directed against evangelical Christians because they seem to be the largest group within the United States that are the most vocal against the changes which are occurring with regard to the traditional biblical view. So amongst some of these arguments, prenatal bloodstream effects, fraternal birth order, having the right genes, separation anxiety, female steroids to the brain, twins, antagonistic genetics, unlocking the gay gene. These titles are taken directly from the website. Why straights have gay kids, it's literally in your head, female sexual fluidity, straight women not being the norm, the existence of bisexual men, and something known as phantom sex parts with respect to transgenderism. So essentially what I have discovered in going through these, and your handout that has been passed out to you, has the sources from which this has been taken. You will notice that some of those have an asterisk beside them. The reason why I place the asterisk there is because in order to obtain that particular study, if you're interested in pursuing this further, you need to pay for it. Okay? So the ones that do not have an asterisk beside them are free. So one of the things that I discovered in going through this is that in this cultural war that is going on, you have people cherry-picking things to support one view or the other from a scientific standpoint. Whereas we know, in order to be able to get the right scientific view, whenever you have a hypothesis that you formulated, in order to be able to see whether that hypothesis holds true, you need to look at the larger body of evidence. You have to have a large sample size. There are strict controls in the studies that need to be done, because if you don't do that, you're going to have skewed results. So one thing I want to mention with regard to one of the things that I discovered with regard to the twins that they mentioned is that the study that they cited, and I'm surprised that they didn't catch this before they posted it online, has actually been repudiated. there is an update. When you click on that, it says as of 2015, the study is now no longer considered valid because upon further inquiry, we discovered that the research methodology did not hold to the strict standards. In other words, the results were skewed in bias or in favor of one way or the other. But the more important thing is that in going through all this, is that we still don't know what causes it. And for the Christian, it really doesn't matter what causes it, whether it's genetic, biological, environmental, or a combination of everything. Because one thing that we have discovered is that there's multiple pathways that lead to it, but we don't know why. And so that, for the Christian, that's the safest thing to go with at this point, because when you've learned the gospel message and you learn what God's will is for you, regardless of what your past association is or your past inclination is, you make changes in your life as part of developing that new creature, becoming that new man. You leave behind the things of the past. It's not going to be easy. And this study that I'm presenting today is by no means exhaustive. It only scratches the surface. There's so much more that can be discussed on this, and that's why I provided you the handout, so that if you do want to investigate further, you have the resources as a starting point. Now, let's continue here. So, 2 years ago, in 2016, a paper was released by Dr. Paul McHugh in conjunction with Dr. Lawrence Mayer. Dr. Paul McHugh was the chief resident of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And you all know I'm from Baltimore, so I'm going to have a natural bias for Johns Hopkins. And Lawrence Mayer is a scholar in residence at the Department of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And he is a biostatistician and epidemiologist. So what he and Dr. McHugh did is took everything that was out there, collated it, and looked at it to see, as a larger body of evidence, what do we know at this point? So these are some of the conclusions that they came up with. And I want to make sure I'm on the right slide. Let's see. Yep. So the first one there is, the understanding of sexual orientation as an innate, biologically fixed property of human beings, the idea that people are born that way, as of yet, is not supported by scientific evidence. While there is evidence that biological factors such as genes and hormones are associated with sexual behaviors and attractions, there are no compelling causal biological explanations for human sexual orientation, meaning that there's no specific gay gene, as it were. They have not been able to prove that. Continuing onward, while minor differences in the brain structures and brain activity between homosexual and heterosexual individuals have been identified by researchers, such neurobiological findings do not demonstrate whether these differences are innate or are the result of environmental and psychological factors. Longitudinal studies of adolescents suggest that sexual orientation may be quite fluid over the life course for some people, with one study estimating that as many as 80% of male adolescents who report same-sex attractions no longer do so as adults. That's a staggering figure. Because, and I took this from the Watchtower Society's book, Young People Ask, because they have some very good information for young people, I'm attracted to the same sex, does that mean I'm gay? And this is from a young person who is going through puberty. And it says, not at all. In many cases, same-sex attraction is nothing more than a passing phase. And one of the young women that they interviewed said, through my biology classes in school, I learned that during the adolescent years, hormone levels can fluctuate greatly. I truly think that if more youths knew more about their bodies, they would understand that same-sex attraction can be temporary and they wouldn't feel the pressure to be gay. And when I was discussing this with a sister back in the fall of last year, she made an interesting observation. She said, you know, it kind of makes sense because up until the point that children go through puberty, they're associating with only their own sex. So when the hormones kick in, it would make sense that it would be possible that they would experience their first attraction of someone of the same sex. But as that process of maturation occurs and they go through puberty, studies have found that 2 years later, let's say this is at 14 or 15, by the time they get to 17 years old, 80% of the adolescents that were surveyed actually had completely switched. They no longer had that. So this is something that we need to keep in mind when, if we have a young person come up to us, or you have a friend that comes up to you and says, hey, I think I'm gay, what am I going to do about this? One of the things that you could share with them would be, hey, this may just be a passing phase, because studies show that 80% of adolescents will desist from this. However, if the same-sex desires persist, what can be done? First of all, don't give in to them. We know that Jehovah condemns homosexual acts. Therefore, the person who struggles with same-sex desires is presented with a reachable goal. He or she can choose not to act on those desires. Unlike the animal kingdom, we as human beings do not act on instinct. We have the power of reason. That's what separates us from the animal kingdom. So, yes, we may have these desires, but that doesn't mean that we have to act upon them, because the reasoning faculty kicks in. And this is true of heterosexuality as well. You know, we always focus on homosexuality because of the negative connotation that exists surrounding it. But the same is true of heterosexuality. If someone commits adultery or someone commits fornication by having sex outside of marriage, that's a conscious choice. Yeah, you had that desire there because you were attracted to that other person, but that doesn't necessarily mean that is what then pushed you into it. And we know that from yesterday with regard, Brother John Traziak in his talk mentioned James chapter 1 about each person being led out by their desire, because if you let the desire run wild, it leads to sin and then eventually into death if you continue to act upon it. The other thing, too, and the Bible mentions this, the Bible refers to puberty as, and this is from the New World Translation, bloom of youth. This is in 1 Corinthians 7:36. It says, remember that when you're in that period, everything is involuntary with regard to sexual arousal. If at times you feel an attraction to a member of the same sex, be assured that that doesn't necessarily mean that you're gay. Such inclinations usually fade with time. Now, the other thing that has come up within recent years is transgenderism. So that's why I've also included this. Our clinic where I work actually has one of the leading pediatric endocrinologists, and many of you may be aware of this, where they give puberty blockers to children as young as 12 to stop puberty. This is for children who think that they're the opposite sex, to arrest puberty. This is so-called to give them the opportunity to decide whether they want to become a male, you know, if they're male, if they want to become female. And then at 16, according to the Endocrinology Society, is when they can be given cross-sex humane hormones to become the opposite sex. So I've included this in here because this is the hot topic of the moment here in the United States with respect to this. So as mentioned here, it says, the hypothesis that gender identity is an innate fixed property of human beings that is independent of biological sex, that a person might be a man trapped in a woman's body or a woman trapped in a man's body, is not supported by scientific evidence. And this is also for those, even those in the LGBT community, those scientists who are fair in their observations have even said this is the case. According to a recent estimate, about 0.6% of U.S. adults identify as a gender that does not correspond to their biological sex. Studies comparing the brain structures of transgender and non-transgender individuals have demonstrated weak correlations between brain structure and cross-gender identification. These correlations do not provide any evidence for a neurobiological basis for cross-gender identification. And then continuing on, compared to the general population, adults who have undergone sex reassignment surgery continue to have a higher risk of experiencing poor mental health outcomes. One study found that compared to controls, sex reassigned individuals were about 5 times more likely to attempt suicide and about 19 times more likely to die by suicide. This was the reason why Dr. Paul McHugh at Johns Hopkins Hospital closed the sex reassignment clinic in Baltimore in the early 1980s, because it was introduced in the late 60s and then continued through the entire 1970s. In the early 80s, he commissioned a study to be done to see whether or not it had this sex reassignment surgery had actually helped or done away with the psychological issues that he had seen them have in his clinical sessions with them. And his research showed that that was not the case. So being a doctor, and the first rule of being a doctor is do no harm, he could no longer justify the mutilation of perfectly healthy individuals to transition from one sex to the other, and that's why he had the clinic closed. Ironically, since his retirement, September of last year, so now a year ago, Johns Hopkins reopened the clinic to this huge fanfare, and now essentially that gentleman is vilified because he's being blamed for lost generations of helping people, when in fact he did it the ethical thing, in my opinion. Children, I mentioned already, this is really a hot topic at the moment. It says, children are a special case when addressing transgender issues. Only a minority of children who experience cross-gender identification will continue to do so into adolescence or adulthood. According to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual version 5, in biological males, the persistence of gender dysphoria has only ranged from 2.2% to 30%. Whereas in natal or biological females, the persistence has ranged from 12 to 50%. What that means is that 75 to 80% of the children who are diagnosed with gender dysphoria in childhood after puberty desist and are no longer gender dysphoric. And so hence you've got the quandary, why are you giving them these cross-sex hormones? Because now the push, especially in San Francisco and in Boston, are to lower the age at which they're giving these hormones to the children, which is irreparable damage. You cannot go back because it will cause permanent sterility at that point. This was confirmed by the Endocrine Society in the United Kingdom. So in their report, this is what they did, is those numbers that I quoted earlier from the DSM version 5, if you convert it to the opposite spectrum, that's where they're getting the 75 to 80%. It says, who were diagnosed with gender dysphoria before they reached puberty did not have the condition after puberty. So that's where I got that statement from. The other thing that goes along with this is there is little scientific evidence for the therapeutic value of interventions that delay puberty or modify the secondary sex characteristics of adolescence. Although some children may have improved psychological well-being if they are encouraged and supported in their cross-gender identification. However, there is no evidence that all children who express gender atypical thoughts or behavior should be encouraged to become transgender. The reason for this is something known as neuroplasticity. Our brains can be influenced by repetitive behaviors or actions. So if you encourage a child who is still developing, especially when the brain is that plastic at that time and can change, you are creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because they're a boy, if you leave them alone, they may stay a boy. But if you say, oh, you want to be a girl, and you encourage that, you run the risk that after they go through puberty, then they want to go through the hormones. But then when they hit 25, I don't want to use this, it kind of sounds kind of uncaring, but they wake up and realize, hey, I'm not really that, but by that time, the damage is irreparable. APA conflicting statements. Some of you may be familiar with the American Psychological Association. Notice in 1998, this is when the whole gay gene thing was popular. There is considerable recent evidence to suggest that biology, including genetic or inborn hormonal factors, play a significant role in a person's sexuality. 10 years later, 2008. There is no consensus among scientists about the exact reasons that an individual develops a heterosexual, bisexual, gay or lesbian orientation, although much research has examined the possible genetic, hormonal, developmental, social, and cultural influences on sexual orientation, no findings have emerged that permit scientists to conclude that sexual orientation is determined by any particular factor or factors. Many think that nature and nurture both play complex roles. Most people experience little or no sense of choice about their sexual orientation. Complete reversal of the 1998 position. And this is closer to the truth, based on the scientific studies. It's now 2018, 10 years after this was released, and if you go to their website, it's still the same statement. Other disingenuous statements by them. Same-sex sexual attractions, behavior, and orientations per se are normal and positive variants of human sexuality. Gay men, lesbians, and bisexual individuals form stable, committed relationships and families that are equivalent to heterosexual relationships and families in essential respects. This is because they're trying to normalize that in our society. But the interesting thing is that this task force was composed of 7 members, 6 of which were gay. So you create a report that you've already got the predetermined conclusion. Okay. How am I doing on time? I hope it's not too clinical for you, brethren. So I don't want to... I have until... 10, what I have about? 10:30. All right. Let me go ahead and skip ahead because I want to get to the actual scriptural issues. So I knew I would not have enough time, so let me just go ahead and zip through this real quick. Okay. So from a scriptural standpoint, if you're an individual that's struggling with this, what are some of the scriptural things that you can do to derive comfort and benefit and to be able to deal with the struggle? Or if you're the friend or the loved one of someone who's going through this, what scriptural support can you give them? This is where the pastoral aspect comes in. This is not just limited to the elders. This is anyone can act in this role. Because we're told in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, to bear one another's burdens. So if the individual has a love for the Lord, is striving to stay on that path, we can be there with them to help them on that journey to succeed and not to give in. Because Satan's world is on this side, and that's the path of least resistance. So some of the scriptures, throw all your anxieties upon Jehovah in prayer, confident that he cares for you. Jehovah can fortify you with a peace that excels all thought. This can guard your heart and your mental powers and give you power beyond what is normal to keep from acting on wrong desires. One adolescent who struggled with the fear that he might be bisexual says, "Whenever my thoughts disturb me, I pray, and Jehovah sustains me. Without his help, I couldn't have dealt with this problem. Prayer is my lifeline." Fill your mind with upbuilding spiritual thoughts. Read the Bible daily. Never underestimate its power to shape your mind and heart for good. One young man mentioned that the Bible, including scriptures such as 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10, and Ephesians 5, 3, has had a power effect on me. I read these scriptures whenever wrong desires occur. Other admonitions. Shun pornography and gay propaganda, which will only fuel wrong thoughts. Some motion pictures and television programs also foster the belief that homosexuality is nothing more than a so-called alternative lifestyle. Alex and I have found this to be very true in some of even the historical pieces that we're watching, where this has been injected into the piece that we're watching as though it were the most prominent thing in the past. And so that's something that we have to be aware of ourselves. The world's warped thinking affected my mind and added to my sexual confusion, said another teenage girl. Now I steer clear of anything or anyone that promotes homosexuality. Seek out a confidant and talk to him or her about your thoughts. I found it interesting that the Watchtower Society had included Proverbs 31:26. That's the capable wife chapter. So in other words, perhaps someone got married because they thought that was going to be the solution to solving their sexual orientation problems, and now they're struggling. They can share that with their wife, or it could be the opposite way around, and that can be your confidence so that you two can work out the situation together. One young man who sought the help of a Christian elder recalls, his counsel was very effective. I wish I had spoken to him a lot earlier. Then the next information that I have was taken from a book that was written by Ron Woolsey, who was raised a Seventh-day Adventist, left the church, entered homosexuality because he had that inclination, but then he left it. And his story is interesting because of the fact that his family never gave up on him. His parents always made a point of visiting him. And he always said his mother had forgetfulness. And what he meant by that is that she would bring something to read, a book, a tract, whatever the thing was on the gospel message. And in the room that she stayed in, she would accidentally leave it behind. So over the course of a decade, by the time that was over, there was an entire library of religious reference works there in the book, in the room. So he was dissatisfied with the relationship that he was in with another man. So he one day sat down and started reading that. And then it started clicking. So it had a positive impact. And what that tells us is that if we do have a loved one who is struggling with this, or even someone who has left the truth, don't give up on them, because the possibility always exists that they will come back. Sometimes people have to experience the world. They have to do it the hard way to learn that that's not the way that God had intended for them. So here are some of the admonitions that he had. Realize God's love. Face yourself. Acknowledge your sin. Understand that salvation is for you too. The cause of homosexuality is irrelevant, as I mentioned earlier. Learn to forgive. It's a matter of choice on whether you pursue this, as I mentioned earlier. Continuing on. Understand that temptation is not sin. Even when you desist from that lifestyle, because if, depending on how long you pursued it, we know the expression that habits, actions eventually become habits, and that becomes ingrained in the individual. So that the individual has been involved in this for decades, it's going to be extremely difficult for them to leave. And they will fall at times. And so that's why they need to understand, that's why we have the throne of heavenly grace, that they can go to Jehovah in prayer through Jesus Christ. And, you know, you're going to stumble many times, but know that God is there for you to pick you up and to sustain you. Walk with God. Protect your environment has already been mentioned. Personalize scripture with respect to the exceeding great and precious promises. If we inject ourselves in those promises, that can be used to sustain us. Act upon God's word. Be grateful. And the secret of overcoming. Now, the other thing I have here, too, is there was a book that was written by an individual who actually went through the sex change operation. Brother Rick Sarasi mentioned him in his Christian Questions special that he did several months ago on this topic of gender dysphoria. The gentleman's name is Walt Heyer, and he wrote a book called A Transgender's Faith. He now regrets doing that because at the time in the 1970s, he was in the early 80s, he was diagnosed as like the prime case for gender dysphoria. However, even after he had the operation, he still was having problems, and he was switching back and forth between the two identities, male and female. So an astute psychologist, as he was at his wit's end, asked him, he said, do you have any journals that you've written when you've been either male or female? And he said, yeah, I always keep a diary. He said, can you bring that in? So he did. And the psychologist immediately noticed that the handwriting was different when he was under the male identity versus the female. Further research confirmed that he actually did not have gender dysphoria, but that he suffered from multiple personality disorder. Because he was just not one female identity, he was several, and the handwriting actually was different for each of those personalities. This is not to say that all gender dysphoria is because of this, but it also shows that you won't want to jump to conclusions with a diagnosis, because further investigation may determine that such is not the case. So this chapter here, Thoughts on Ministering to Scary People, was written by his pastor. So he said the first thing that he had to do when he started meeting with Walt was establish ground rules. He had to let him know, you have to give me the freedom to be completely honest with you, and the church leadership needs to be aware, in other words, informed of how we're progressing with your one-on-one counseling. But his goal in working with Walt was to develop honesty before God in prayer, establish or develop biblically based decision making, as well as have accountability in one's lifestyle decisions, and the freedom to accept God's grace and tenderness. So this is in the context of transgenderism, but it also applies to homosexuality as well, if we are in the process of working with someone. And incidentally, that person was providing only spiritual counsel, whereas he was actually seeing a professional licensed psychotherapist on the side. With regard to us, some of the convictions that cause us to reach out. Jesus' example obligates us to acknowledge and reach out. If you think about it, he was accused of being a bad person himself, because who did he so-called hang out with? The tax collectors and the publicans, who were the deviants of society in his day, to use a modern term, if you will. But why did he go to them? He knew that they were in need of healing that only he and his heavenly Father could provide. He didn't give up on them. But does that mean that he tolerated their behavior? No. We have the example of the woman at the well. After he revealed to her that she had been with seven different men and that the last guy that she was with was not her husband, he said to her, go and sin no more. Because sometimes you'll hear advocates try to use Jesus as an example of tolerance. But when we examine the scriptural record, we see that he did not actually tolerate wrongful behavior. Other thing too, our call is to obey the Lord in ministry and not preserve the status quo or avoid criticism. The individual is hurting and broken before the Lord, not rebellious or defiant. If they're defiant, then we have the admonition to exhort them, confront them, and oppose them by the weight of Scripture in the hope of pulling them back to obedience. Okay, I'm running out of time, so let me go ahead and skip to the end to wrap things up. Okay, the concluding thoughts. First of all, do not lean upon your own understanding, as found in Proverbs. Throw your burden on Jehovah. We mentioned this already from Psalms 55. Pray without ceasing. Do not be conformed, but be transformed. That's part of our living sacrifice. That's a process of sanctification. Don't identify as a gay Christian, because that's an oxymoron. If you truly are becoming the new creature or the new man, that old man should be far from you in the distance. You should be moving further and further away. If you adopt that title, you are saying or acknowledging that the process of sanctification is not working in you in order to become fully that new creature. Bring every thought into captivity. Remember that the kingdom is the only permanent solution to mankind's brokenness. This is what our job is going to be in the kingdom as part of the ministry of reconciliation, to help people walk up the highway of holiness in whatever way Jehovah sees fit. Also remember that Jesus' kingdom is not of this world, and the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. We should not be attacking people. Pay Caesar's things to Caesar, but God's things to God. Should a law be passed that says we have to do such and such, and it's in direct moral conflict with the Scriptures, we need to obey God first, regardless of what those personal consequences may be to us. And that gets into obey God as ruler rather than men. Also remember, this is Satan's world, and it's passing away, but he who does God's will remain forever. And lastly, be faithful unto the end to receive the crown of life. And remember that such were some of you. Thank you for your kind attention.